policy.
Let me just say that we administer three programs: scholarships, student loans, and grants. And I believe your question is related to the opportunity grant. It is 11% of the cost of education. So if you take a high-cost institution like Reed or Willamette University, 11%, I think Willamette's cost of education is now over $30,000. 11% of $30,000 is $3,300. The number of students, private college students, served by the Oregon Opportunity Grant is about 2,000 out of that 19,000 students that are served. Did I get to your question?
Well, I was just, yeah, I guess I, if I could follow up, if some students who want to attend University of Oregon or Portland State or PCC are denied, while someone who wants to attend Willamette, which is a fine university, receives $3,000 or $4,000, I'm just wondering what was behind that policy.
I would go back to our mission, and our mission is serving students, not segments. And so what we determine if a student is eligible and allow them to vote with their feet based upon what their particular needs are. And what are each of the segments plays an important part in the educational process. We just heard previous testimony from the two public sectors about enrollments are increasing and capacity issues, that there is a need for the three segments to offer education in Oregon. And because they don't receive state support, they do have a higher cost of education.
Thanks.
Further questions? Representative Bates, you look like you need to ask a question.
Madam Chair, this is probably not the appropriate time to delve into this problem. It's a minor part of the budget. We're looking at a $720 million shortfall, but just to be blunt, I mean, I was one of those poverty students that came through the system, and I don't understand your philosophy at all here. You're trying to help kids who can't afford to go to college. You're funding some kids at a level that covers the entire tuition for a year at Oregon State University or U of O, and telling other kids you can't get any money at all from the state, from general funds, money that all taxpayers have paid into. I don't understand why you can't cut 2%. I don't understand why you're funding kids to go to private school, and I'll just leave it there. I'm just not getting it here, and that's not the first time it's happened to me. I'll leave it there for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Shutter.
Thank you. Just to piggyback on that comment, I'm noticing a $60,000 reduction in the foster child scholarship program, which is a 60% reduction of the amount we've funded in that program, and weighing that against $3,300 or so to pay to someone to go to Willamette. I'm not sure that this is the first time I've ever visited these budget issues, so it's all new to me. Maybe it makes sense if you speak the right language.
Representative Johnson.
I guess I did have a question, Madam Chair. Apropos this last exchange, I'm curious, several testifiers have made reference to the governor's instruction vis-a-vis thinning the soup. I've seen the sheet, or at least I thought I'd seen the sheet, that went out to agencies that said, this is a guiding principle, don't thin the soup. And it said pretty much just that. My curiosity is a more global curiosity, whether or not there's a separate set of instructions that defines what thinning the soup is, or whether or not it's been largely left to each agency to interpret it, which speaks to the questions asked by my colleagues, Representative Shetterly and Representative Bates, in terms of what the definition of your thinning the soup is, to deny a child access, period, in order to fund at a different level for a private education. And I'm not making a quantitative judgment about private versus public. I'm simply saying denied access entirely versus a fraction of the funding at a private institution, how you all have defined thinning the soup.
I'd like to take a shot at it, Madam Chair. And actually, this will answer a couple of the questions, because we have basically biennial debates about the private school question, and it's been the legislature who's given us this directive. It's not the commission who makes this decision. We used to have more awards for private schools, and this last time the commission basically went and folded all those into the opportunity grant, but we used to have separate, basically, cash awards just for private schools only. And we tried to get it all into one pool so it wouldn't be such a sticking point. And the legislature this last time said, okay, let's do that. Here's a formula. You get a certain percentage of the cost of your education rather than a certain percentage. And then here you get another cash grant here if you go to a private school, and you get another cash grant here. And so it's been at the direction of the legislature that these programs have been funded to date. And the commission didn't set up the original program to only be at one college or the other. It was the legislature who has done it. And there's probably been three or four sessions where it only happened through a budget note that it was that you were allowed to still go to a private school with your grant. So it's a long-standing sort of a deal that we don't necessarily have a full understanding of either, what motivates the legislature to revisit that repeatedly. But on the thinning the soup question, we didn't get a lot of direction. And we talked at our commission meeting about there's contradictory principles. If we don't thin the soup, then we damage excessively programs and leave no safety net, which was another one of the things we weren't supposed to do. For us, what not thinning the soup meant was we looked at programs that are not as central to our mission, like loan repayment programs where someone's already made it through college and now what we're trying to do is essentially provide rural health services. It's not quite the same as giving someone that access to college in the first place. It's trying to get them to go to a different part of the state than they normally would in practice. So we tried to do, you'll see, we did heavier percentage cuts in places than just a straight across the board, because we were trying to look at our mission and say, let's help people get through college and get a degree. Mm-hmm. Now, what we're going to do January is go back and talk about Representative Bates' notion of, well, let's get everybody through with $200 less, and why can't we do that? And I've only been on a year, so I'm sure they've talked about it, but I need to ask them to rethink it, because I think you have an excellent point. So for other agencies, I'm not sure. For us, our response to not thinning the soup meant that you see 60% of the former foster children scholarship taken rather than just 10, which it could have been. But we chose to try and offer up options that say, well, this is a program that serves vulnerable people, and it's new, and you could start again in 2 years. And what we've done, if you'll notice, is we've included it to be back at 100% in the next biennium in our current service level, to try and essentially call it a temporary delay in the starting of this new scholarship program, and to try and hope the economy turns around and be back at current service level when it starts again, to try and help those students go to school.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That was a very interesting discussion. Committee, we are going to recess and reconvene at 1:30, where we will take up Natural Resource Agency budgets. To reconvene the House Interim Special Committee on Budget Prioritization, and this afternoon we have Natural Resource Agencies appearing before us, beginning with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Welcome, Director Ball.
Thank you. Chair Morgan, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and with me today is Deputy Director Pam Ryan, who oversees the administrative services side of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We come before you, Chair Morgan, and members of the committee for a brief overview of the budget reductions for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And might I ask, Chair, how deep do you want me to get into detail and a definition today with the time constraints that we have?
We have 20 minutes allotted for your department, which includes questions for the committee. So give us 10 minutes worth of overview.
Okay, very good. I'll start out just commenting on the two statutes, two primary statutes that drive the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife with respect to managing the commercial fishery and also the fish and wildlife. That's ORS 496.102, which is a state wildlife policy, and ORS 506.109, which is a state's fish food policy. Also along with that, in determining these cuts, we use the Oregon benchmarks. And we identified four things earlier this year with ODFW staff, the things that we're going to accomplish in this biennium before the next legislative session, and that was to restore the fiscal integrity of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, finalize and begin implementation of the native fish conservation policy, comprehensive review of the department's wildlife damage policy, and we're also integrate the Oregon plan into ODFW work priorities and become a leader in the Oregon plan for the state of Oregon. In general nature, we went through two different cutting exercises, one that identified administrative services for the department, and then we looked at program cuts as well. The administrative services cuts that we identified initially were specific to temporary cuts only. The program cuts permanent. If everyone would turn to the second page of their handout, you will see in detail the administrative cuts that we assigned to the agency and done at 2% increments. The vacant supervisory executive assistant director's office for the first and second year will be held vacant. The vacant administrative specialist first and second year, we eliminate that publication support in the wildlife in the I&E division, and the vacant publication editor in the wildlife division will also be held vacant and not filled, totaling $256,537 of savings. Of the proposed cuts that are permanent in nature for the program, as an overview, it's quite obvious that the Fish Division receives the majority of the cuts. That division in the agency receives most of the general funds and most of the lottery funds, but consequently it takes the lion's share of the cuts. How we went through the cuts that are identified here is that I had the region supervisors in, the four region supervisors at our headquarters office, along with Fish Division, Wildlife Division, and Habitat Division. We went through the list of proposed cuts one by one and prioritized them at 2% increments. I feel that the cuts that are revealed to you in the handout today are indicative of some very conscientious work on behalf of the staff. I ask that they first look at the service delivered to Oregon citizens and also the impacts to Fish and Wildlife Management as they identified the cuts in priority order. So I feel that they have done a very adequate job in that. As a brief overview, there are 29 FTEs identified in the program cuts that would be permanent. There are about half of those are currently vacant, the other half are filled. And if you look at the first 2 and 4% cuts, for the most part you'll note that in those cuts you will not see but just 2 or 3 positions that will be vacated with people occupying those positions. After 4%, almost all the cuts will detail a person in a job today. In addition to that, we were asked to look at the hatcheries, and the hatcheries were also considered as part of the cuts for the 10% plan. Of course, that brings the attention of a lot of people, and I thought probably we might spend a little bit of time discussing that issue. At 2%, we would reduce the Trask River hatchery by eliminating the hatchery manager and having that hatchery supervised out of the Cedar Creek hatchery near Tillamook. We would also reduce production pass capacity at Cedar Creek and move some fish into some other hatcheries in the state. At a 6% cut, we would reduce the Salmon River hatchery, reduce coho to Salmon River, reduce summer steelhead for Silettes, retain coho production for the STEP program, and retain fall Chinook for the Pacific Salmon Treaty Indicator stock. At the 8% level on hatcheries, we would eliminate Cedar Creek. We would close trout production and trout stocking in many of Oregon's rivers and lakes in western Oregon. And at the 10% level, we would eliminate the North Nehalem River hatchery. In addition to that, we were also asked to put 3 hatcheries up for total cuts and elimination. That is listed as the Trask Hatchery, the Salmon River Hatchery, and the Elk River Hatchery. If we were to close all the hatcheries in order, we would close them by taking Trask first, then the Salmon Hatchery, Salmon River Hatchery, Cedar Creek Hatchery, Elk River Hatchery, and then the Nehalem Hatchery. In addition, on the 3 hatchery closures, we do have a budget breakout as to the cost of operating each facility and a detail of what those hatcheries produce starting on page 7. And on page 10, we have enclosed a map so you can see where the 34 hatcheries are in the state of Oregon and identify where those five hatcheries are that we would be closing. And if anyone would like a would like reference material on all the hatcheries, it has the cost and the biennial budget for each hatchery as well as production at each hatchery. I have that available for anyone who might be interested. We can provide that to the committee, Chair Morgan.
If I might ask a question, Director Ball, a clear chunk of the revenue that keeps the department going are it's the money that's received from the selling of fishing licenses, and the fish that can be caught that the licenses are issued for are fish that come out of the hatcheries. What is going to be the revenue impact on the agency of closing these hatcheries?
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, the license sales in the state of Oregon for Department of Fish and Wildlife makes up 40% of the budget. About 80% of the anadromous fish in Oregon that are caught by sport anglers are produced from a hatchery. And most of that is geared towards protecting the wild fish and targeting the hatchery fish, which we feel are fish that should be pursued and taken. And in fact, this last year when we had identified surplus numbers of fish, we increased the bag limit on some of those fish up to 4 per day so people could catch those fish. We do have some estimates on what it means to the economy of Oregon on a total personal income. This is provided to us by Dr. Chris Carter of our department economist. And this is figuring, of course, you have to remember that there are many environmental factors that affect the return rate of fish to a hatchery. Once they're released as a smolt and they go to travel to the ocean and come back, there is a certain mortality factor you have to build in. But if you figure a 2 to 3% return rate on fish that are released, which is fairly average, there is an estimate on what that is to the personal income in Oregon. And if we close Elk River, that would impact somewhere between $327,000 to $463,000 of personal income for Oregonians. If you close the Salmon River, that would impact somewhere between $343,000 and $512,000. If you close Trask River, that would impact personal income by $376,000 to $565,000, the total of which amounts to a range of $1,046,000 to $1,543,000. Now, that just explains what would happen on with respect to the personal income derived from fishery resources, Chair. The exact number of licenses that would not be sold as a result of closing those three hatcheries per se, I don't have at my fingertips. But I can say that we have noticed with the increased returns of salmon for this last year, we have experienced an increase in our license revenues as a result of more angling licenses and salmon steelhead tags being sold. In fact, Dr. Carter told us that we could anticipate easily another $500,000 of revenue to the department as a result of those extra licenses being sold this last year. It may be a little bit more, but Dr. Carter said that he felt very comfortable that you will experience this year a $500,000 increase.
Thank you. The other question we have is a number of the cuts that you've laid on the table here are areas that directly impact the efforts to improve habitat quality and water quality for salmon. I think this may be a question for Mr. Rocco at LFO. Well, what I'm curious about is what the potentialities are to use some of the National Marine Fisheries Service money and Measure 66 money to replace the general fund in what's been offered up here.
Madam Chair, I believe as we have been talking about some of the options, that all things are supposedly on the table at this point, and I think that's going to be one of the options that Legislative Fiscal will bring forward on one of these other lists that we're doing that Representative Canope asked about earlier this morning. We're looking at fungible federal monies that could be used to offset some expenses in the natural resource area.
Thank you. Representative Smith had a question.
When you say federal grants, is that matching with state funds?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, there are some federal grants that require state match.
Okay. Does any of your federal grants allow you to cut spending of state funds?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, I'm not sure.
Well, if you get a federal grant to help you with the program, so say some new grants coming along, will that help you balance your budget, for instance, or is it all state match money?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, we have some grants that don't require a match, but there are grants that do require a match. If the state money falls away from those matching state funds with a federal fund, we will lose the federal money.
I understand. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make certain that looking at page 6 relative to the reduction, after reduction closure analysis, it indicated Trask River would be number 1, Salmon River number 2, Cedar number 3, Elk River number 4, and the Halem number 5. Is that in the order of efficiencies that those, I know that we have some tremendously inefficient hatcheries within the state system that cost us more to run than others. Is that basically based upon efficiencies of these, or are these expendable type of operations that we're doing something that could be done in some other area?
Chair Morgan, Representative Butler, the priority order, Trask, Salmon, Cedar Creek, Elk, and then the Halem, were felt by our fisheries division staff. If you were going to close hatcheries, that you would have the least impact by closing the Trask or the resource and the fishery opportunity that it provides, then to the Salmon, then to Cedar, Elk, and the Halem.
Madam Chair, just follow up. I want to make certain that it's based upon, you're saying that it's based upon the least impact, or are these, are we going to close down some very, very efficient hatcheries that are making us a lot of good money return on fish? Are we going to close some of those down that we're able to produce fish for $2 a pound and keep ones open that are costing us $6 and $8 a pound? That's my question.
Chair Morgan, Representative Butler, we did not look at it specifically as a cost for fish ratio, but we looked at what was going to have the least impact to the public and to the fish and wildlife resource. And that's how we prioritize the cuts.
Well, Madam Chair, I go back to what I've long questioned here, and what I understood was stated last week on the 6th in one of the meetings that was held here in the building, and that is their private industry can produce these fish for a whole lot less than the state can produce them. And if that's the situation, maybe we ought to close most of the hatcheries and turn to private industry and ask them to produce these fish at a much lesser cost. Because this is an opportunity, as I see it, to look at privatization of these hatcheries and or other opportunities in the fish business to move those dollars and still produce the same number of fish with a whole lot less money. So just by way of consideration, if this prioritization list is not based upon the inefficiency of these hatcheries, then we're probably keeping some hatcheries open that are costing us $8-$9 a pound to produce fish, when we can replace those for a little over $2 a pound under the worst of conditions. So I just want to make certain that the ones that are closed are the most inefficient ones, because private hatcheries can do as good a job or better job for the number of dollars we're expending here.
Thank you. Representative Nola.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This actually follows nicely from Representative Butler's line of questioning. In the proposed closures of hatcheries, do you anticipate replacing the product of those hatcheries with purchased fish, or does that product just disappear from the system altogether?
Chair Morgan, Representative Nolan, at this time we anticipate the production from those hatcheries would just simply be eliminated and not replaced.
Further questions or comments? We have used your time up, Director. Thank you very much for coming before us. That was interesting testimony. Call now on the Department of Environmental Quality.
It's gone, though, now. Oh, sure.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Stephanie Halleck, and I'm the director of the Department of Environmental Quality, and with me today is Jim Royce, who is my budget manager, and my testimony is being handed out to you, and I'm just going to pause until you get it, because I want you to have it in front of you so I can refer to it. As I'm sure you all know, our department is responsible for providing leadership in protecting clean air, clean water, and responding to emergencies such as toxic spills that can affect our land quality as well as our water. And we're also in charge of managing the proper disposal of hazardous and solid waste. What I have for you on this testimony is a summary of the general fund reductions. In the handout that I believe you have, there were 21 items submitted by DEQ in priority order. And I'm going to talk a little bit generally about our general fund, and then I'm going to talk about the specific cuts by program. In the testimony, the pie chart shows you that approximately 16.5% of DEQ's operating budget is general fund and lottery. That equates to about $28 million. Therefore, the 10% that we were instructed to take by the Department of Administrative Services is $2.8 million of general fund and lottery. As you can also see in the pie chart, we are primarily funded a little over 63% by other fund, which is fees and cost recovery from our cleanup activities, and 19.9% federal fund. I've also included a table that shows at the top of the second page the specific reduction options by program, which shows the total amount of general fund and lottery in air, water, land quality, and community solutions team, and our support to the legislative fiscal office and the governor's office, and the amount of the reduction and the percentage of that reduction compared to the general fund. I would just say this presentation today is focusing on the long-term program cuts. We had already submitted $589,000 in administrative short-term cuts for this biennium, which my understanding is not part of the rebalance, that your rebalance is going to be focused on permanent long-term, and that's what I'm talking about today. In proposing the cuts, I tried to minimize the impact on our water quality program and specifically on the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. And we also held harmless the Community Solutions Team because we believe that it is essential for our agency and others to support this new way of doing business with our local partners in government. I'm going to summarize briefly the impact of the cuts by program, starting with air quality as I've outlined in the testimony. The air quality program, which is an $850,093 cut that you'll see on the little chart I put there, it represents a 16% cut in air quality general fund. It will affect our ability to do sampling and monitoring for air pollution from particulate matter and for some toxics monitoring, although since toxics is an overall priority for the agency, we tried to minimize our impacts of general fund cuts and toxics in general. Secondly, it would reduce our ability to respond to illegal open burning complaints and follow up enforcement on those activities. We also proposed a small reduction to the Lane Regional Air Pollution Authority, which administers our programs in Lane County. And we would also probably have to delay the development of what we call air quality maintenance plans, which are the plans that we work with communities that are at risk of exceeding national air quality and in air quality standards to develop plans so that they do not exceed those standards. In water quality, many of the activities that we do are related to the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds.